Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
The Athletic.
Hello, hello, welcome along once again to Pod on the Tyne, the Thursday edition. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm here with Jacob Whitehead and George Culkin. Jacob, how are you doing? Are you okay?
I'm good. I'm ready for a sort of decidedly more antagonistic experience being on with George rather than Chris for the first time since my return from being away. So I've prepared myself, I've got my stretches in, I've got a few friends to give me a few barbs just to warm me up.
You've had a gentle pre-season friendly and now you're straight in against Man City, aren't you?
That's exactly. Chris was Gateshead and Mrs. Now.
Chris was Gateshead and I'm Man City. Is that what you're saying?
I'd take that, George. I would take that every day.
Yeah, I'd take that. It's all a bit nicey-nicey on Monday, wasn't it? All a bit nicey-nicey. No, that's not. No. Intensity is my identity. Let's get on with this. Come on.
It wasn't quite caustic enough for you, was it, George? How are you doing, by the way? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm all right. Actually, one of the questions from our preview podcast last week was, when will George first cry this season? And I can tell you that it was this morning.
Ah, lovely stuff. Well, yes, George Culkin has been out and about this morning. He's been at the Alan Shearer Foundation for the launch of a new play area, and we've got a little bit of audio from him right now.
So in 2021, the Newcastle United Supporters Trust set up their pledge scheme, and the idea back then was to raise funds to help rescue the club, save the club, maybe buy a stake in the club in case things went really bad at Newcastle, which didn't seem like such a distant prospect. Anyway, for very obvious reasons, that wasn't necessary. And then the second part of the pledge scheme kicked in, which that the money that was raised by Newcastle fans would get distributed to local charities. I'm standing here on Thursday lunchtime. It's a grey and slightly threatening sort of day at Alan Shearer's Foundation, and we see the fruits of £80,000 worth of changes that have happened outside Alan's centre here. And first of all, I just want to ask Alan to describe the scene that we have here.
Well, we're stood here in this wonderful outdoor activity centre in the gardens, which, I am quite emotional because it's just, I don't know what else to say other than it's bloody magnificent. It's just amazing. And we can see and feel the reaction of all the parents and probably more importantly, all the children that are using this place. So I don't suppose thank you is enough to everyone, to you, to Charlotte, to all the other members, to the Newcastle United supporters who very kindly put their money towards this, and it has gone to very, very good cause. And I'm a very happy and proud man today because this is just incredible.
Well, that was quite emotional. I was about to take the piss out of you there because your powers of description were pretty poor. But I'll try and do it. So there are kind of educational facilities here. There's what looks like an earthworm farm in front of us. There are swings. There's a slide. There's like an adventure playground. There's a woodland walk. And there are other sort of playground facilities. All of it is accessible, so kids who are in wheelchairs can easily kind of get around this place as well. And, you know, to put this in perspective, this space, it's an absolutely beautiful space, but it was empty beforehand, and now it's absolutely full. And, yeah, Charlotte, mentioned by Alan there, Charlotte Robson was part of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust board, still is. How do you feel seeing what Newcastle United fans have raised here?
Totally overwhelmed. Like, I got really teary when I walked in. I can't believe how transformed the space is. And as well today, because it's the official opening, that's being used, there's loads of kids here. The smiles on the kids' faces and the laughter and the, like, oh, I can use this, or you know, parents helping them onto slides and things like that. It's just absolutely amazing, and it's far exceeded what my expectations of the space, and I'm so proud to have played a small part in making it happen.
We do get stick as a club, as a fan base, and kind of some of that we understand, but this place has been built on the generosity of a magnificent group of people. Isn't that fair to say, Al?
Yeah, that's very fair to say. I mean, I'm from this area, and never do they fail to amaze me in how kind they are, how generous they are. We all know why that money was put forward, because we wanted to maybe protect our club at some stage. But we all know what happened after that, and for everyone to agree to help and set up this, just a huge, huge thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone. And you can, I think you can feel the atmosphere. You can feel the parents, and I mean, how proud they are. I mean, the number of mums and dads already that I've had come up to me today to say thank you for giving us this. This is amazing. We just didn't think that this was possible. So that's how much it means to me, and more importantly to the parents and the kids.
Are we going to win the league?
I would love to say yes, but no, I don't think we'll win the league. But I was really impressed with what happened Saturday. I'm really confident we'll have another very good season. The atmosphere, as we all know, is just incredible. And Champions League's coming along as well. I can't wait for the draw. Those nights are going to be very, very special. So we'll give whoever we play this year a really tough game. And that is a huge improvement for where we were 5 years ago. And that's good enough for me.
And Charlotte, I'm going to give you the last word. You also contribute to True Faith, the wonderful True Faith. On a scale of class, just how class are Newcastle United?
There's a lot of children around here, but we're fucking class.
Oh, George, that was lovely, man. That was lovely. I'm not surprised you cried.
Yeah, it's very, very emotional. I mean, the thing that made me sort of most emotional, apart from seeing the kids kind of using this facility, was Alan trying his best not to be emotional.
Yeah,
because it's quite funny when you see sort of non-emotional people become emotional. But he, you know, it's absolutely, this facility, which is in Newcastle, is an incredible place. And yeah, but also the thing that made me kind of very moved was seeing, you know, something that's really been created thanks to Newcastle fans, Newcastle United fans, and just a brilliant facility that improved people's lives. When football fans get together, they can do sort of really extraordinary things. And this was just seeing that up close and personal, felt very privileged to do that. And, you know, the exciting thing is that that relationship that's been set up between Alan's Foundation and the Newcastle United Supporters Trust will carry on, we'll see it grow. Yeah, just absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Wonderful stuff, George. And congratulations to everybody involved in that and all the hard work that went into it. Amazing stuff. Right then, chap, shall we crack on?
Let's do it.
Come on, you Maggie.
Another Thursday podcast, another recording potentially scuppered by the signing of a talented young fullback. It's been a few names linked with us in this position, but Lewis Hall is the one that's really exciting supporters. Highly rated by all the stats lads and lasses, and his dad's a Geordie. There's been some talk about this morning, hasn't there, Jacob? And this one's the big news at the minute.
Yeah, so The Athletic reported last night through David Ornstein that Newcastle are actively looking into a deal for Lewis Hall. They actually already had an offer for him rejected earlier this window. There's lots of moving parts of this one. So at that time, Chelsea didn't want to sell and subsequently signed him to a 6-year deal. That looked to be that, but kind of with Chelsea's massive depth at left back now, Newcastle's continued interest, so this looks to have been resurrected. Eddie Howe said that Newcastle would have to be creative to get people in, and they are going to be kind of, this looks if it's going to be a loan, but with an obligation to buy. So all sides effectively seeing it as a permanent deal. Obviously, like I said, moving parts, Michael Olise, spurning Chelsea may yet change this, but as we are at the moment, we know the Thursday experience, Newcastle are hopeful.
And we know what this is like, George, don't we? We've got strong Livermore flashback vibes here. Could this happen in the near future, just in time for this podcast coming out, so we don't get to talk about it?
Well, or we'll have just wasted our time spending 10 minutes talking about it if it all breaks down. Yeah, we should record two different versions. No, they're very hopeful at this point. I mean, it's not been easy for Newcastle since the takeover to do business with rival clubs sort of up there challenging with them.
And as Jacob said, there is the kind of added complexity of how the deal is structured. Doing the deal, as he said, with a loan with an obligation would mean that it goes on to Newcastle's books as a permanent deal next summer, which is quite important for FFP purposes. So that's why they would need to do that. That's what Eddie Howe meant when he talked about being creative. But he is another young, really exciting player. I mean, suddenly one of the interesting things about Newcastle's squad now is seeing its average age come tumbling down. Yes. When the takeover happened, Newcastle had an old team and an aging squad. And suddenly now they've got so many young, exciting prospects, people absolutely at their peak, if not a bit before. I mean, another bit of context is that, you know, we said last week that it was defence that Newcastle were looking to strengthen, but it's felt, although they do, you know, that they have wanted cover at centre half, that a left back felt more doable at this point. He's the one they've gone for, like Livramento, someone who loves to attack. Jacob wrote a really kind of good piece the other day about the options they were looking at and what they were going to bring to the team, what they would hope to bring to the team. But yeah, very exciting.
So I can probably give a bit of a heads up on who Hall is as a player, because actually of all the four candidates who I looked at, his game probably has the fewest holes in. Obviously he's young, there's a lot of projection in there. I think he only played 400 minutes at left back last season in the Premier League. But what we do know, A, he's massively versatile. He was Chelsea's Academy Player of the Year last year. He's played centre-back and left-wing for academy sides, but generally kind of a left-back in the Premier League, which is obviously useful. If you can sort of separate Newcastle's full-back options into kind of either the sit-back and defend ones you like to progress it through passing, such as Trippier, and ones you like to progress it through carrying, such as Livramento, Hall is very much in that latter category. He loves getting forward, getting into the box, taking a player on. He's also got quite a pleasingly old-school look. To me, he looks a bit like a footballer from the 1930s.
It's always a bonus, that, isn't it?
Smokes Woodbine's shorts down by his ankles.
It's flat cap.
Shakes hands with the captain, gets on with it.
Dad who supports Newcastle would twat a penalty, sensible haircut. Excellent. Is there anything else you really need in your life?
Sounds good to me.
Can I just interject here briefly and just say, by the way, that talking about left-back should in no way detract from this podcast's favourite footballer of all time, which is Lord Dan of Burn, or Lord Burn of Blythe, perhaps, I should say, who, by the way, I know I wasn't on the Monday pod, I thought he was really excellent against Aston Villa, who has made the left-back position his own, wasn't expected to last season, filled in when Matt Target was injured and then made it his own. I know that Newcastle have been looking for fullbacks on both sides, but Dan has been absolutely brilliant. And one thing that I know for certain is that he'll relish the challenge of someone coming in. He'll do his utmost to retain his place, and he'll also prove to be a fabulous teammate to people coming in. He'll encourage them, he'll help them, but he'll want to keep the place in his team as well. So, I mean, I do think it's a good moment with Newcastle, on the face of it, about to sign a left-back, to say well done and thanks to Dan.
Absolutely.
Who, in a position that is not his own, you know, was a fundamental part of the joint meanest defence in the division last season, and has been a, you know, absolutely fabulous player for Newcastle.
And we could see more of him at centre-back as well. I mean, that's the exciting option, and about all the versatility of both Hall, Trippier being able to play both sides, Burn. Like, it's such a, how wants fluidity in midfield, where we're getting fluidity in defence as well.
Getting it everywhere, yeah.
George, it's good though, still with a couple of weeks left in the window. Newcastle are still being proactive, aren't they? They're still going out there, they've still got targets. We've spoke about the different parts of the team that maybe need a little bit of bolstering, and this is good work. This is everything they need to do.
Yes, still a chance to get in. Hamza Choudhury on loan, of course. That's the big thing.
Still waiting for that one.
No, the idea of Newcastle actually being active full stop in the transfer window is still a nice novelty, although we should be used to it now, because they've spent a hell of a lot of money since the takeover. I think the more important thing is that they've actually done the majority of their business already. That, you know, Sandro Tonali had a month to embed himself into the team before the season started. Barnes had a bit of time. You know, the reason I'm mentioning that is because in the last week or so, we've seen this extraordinary flurry at the top end of the Premier League, people still buying, you know, bringing in or selling or getting rid of or failing to buy big players who will then have to hit the ground running. Newcastle did.
Some of the fees involved as well, George, are just astonishing, aren't
well,
they?
Well, and does put them, as you said before we came on air, but, you know, puts the fee that Newcastle paid for Bruno Guimaraes into some contact. Same with Tonali. They've done the most of it early, and, you know, for Livramento and Hall, if it happens, they're younger players, they'll be integrated into the team, that's been less vital, but you know, Newcastle have acted smartly, but they've also acted quickly, it feels.
Absolutely right. Check out the full write-up on those four left-back candidates from Jacob on The Athletic, and we're expecting an interview with Lewis Miley very soon as well. Go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to sign up now and pay just $1.99 a month for 12 months. I will be back after a quick break to look ahead to the new season with Newcastle United women's team. Back in a tick. So Becky Langley and Newcastle United women start their league campaign this Sunday with a game at Kingston Park against Halifax. It's another big season for the Lasses, and Jacob has been speaking to one of the new faces in the squad, Amber Keegan-Stobbs.
Amber joined this summer. How are you settling in?
Great, honestly. The club and what the team, the staff and everyone's on the same page, and what the club is doing for the women's team is unreal. So settling in really well. I love the North East and I love Newcastle, so couldn't be better.
And you're from a family of Newcastle fans, right? There's a story in your name.
Yeah, so my dad's a Geordie. He was born in Hampshire, and 1992 I was born. That makes me feel old in my team. I know it's not old in general, I still feel young. But some of these, we've got some really good young players. When I say 1992, they're like, I'm 2005, and I'm like, yeah, okay, thank you. So yeah, 1992, Kevin Keegan was the manager. So my middle name is double barrel first, so it's Amber hyphen Keegan Stobbs.
So how did it work when you were signing for Newcastle? Did you kind of were you able to call up your dad with a bit of surprise? Was he always clued in on it? What was his reaction?
I've always wanted to play for Newcastle, and he's always known that. But obviously, back in the day, and the women's team wasn't there, and then we've seen them progressing. And I was introduced to Becky actually before last season, and that was a conversation that we did have, just because of timings and things like that. It didn't work out, but I would have come last year. At that point, it was like, no, I'm definitely going next year. And I was actually at St James's Park watching the final Premier League game of the season when the women were playing their last game to get promoted. And they announced at St James's Park that, the women have just won, so they won a league for getting promoted. And I was with a friend, I looked at her and I went, oh, fuck. Oh, sorry, I can't say that, can I?
No, you can. Swear away.
Oh,
George,
you can.
George okay. Is very enthusiastic about that, so no, feel free.
So I went, oh, fuck, but I was excited. And she looked at me and was like, that's amazing, isn't it? And I was like, yep, just means I'm moving to Newcastle, which the swear word was just mainly like the surprise. And not that I didn't back us to do it, like Newcastle, but I was like, I've got 2 months to move my life up there, which I was absolutely comfortable with. But it was just... So I just knew it was going to happen. So no surprises for the family, more so, do you think I should do it? I'm going to do it. There was no pressure from my dad or anything like that, but it's a proper emotional and amazing moment for the family, I suppose.
I suppose kind of externally, what's the vision of Newcastle been from other clubs? You've obviously got like lots of experience playing in the Championship. Newcastle are super ambitious, wanting to get up there sooner rather than later. How does kind of the leagues in general view this Newcastle project, even before you got involved?
I think they view it as exciting. Obviously, Newcastle and Men's League has got some criticism, and I'm sure there are some people that are going, oh, they're doing it the quick way and all that sort of stuff. But I know that from the inside, we're doing everything properly. It's not, look at us, we've got this, we've got that. But it's like, as a group of players, a group of staff, we're making the most of what we do have, and we are lucky and loving the support from the fans, from the club, from everyone like that, and from each other. So I think when I did sign, the messages I got from left, right and centre, people that I haven't spoken to for a while, some top players in WSL and some players that play for their country messaging me being like, that is amazing. Like, that is amazing. I think everyone does know how much Newcastle means to me and my family, but people are excited about it. And I think consensus around women's football is that we need more teams to do this sort of stuff, and we need the game to build. So it is a good thing. And don't get me wrong, that isn't going to come without criticism or like rivalries going up and stuff like that. But we're stay grounded. We know that we've got a job to do. We are amazingly like a full-time team in our league. But if we don't make the most out of those hours, then that's our fault. And the part-time teams can be making the most out of their shorter schedules, but getting more out of it. So that is one thing that we are focusing on. Like, yes, we'll have mixed opinions about us, but I think overall it's just amazing for the game.
I guess in terms of doing things properly, were you surprised by the level of talent which is already here? Like, this is a team who were in the fourth division last year, but have kind of England youth team internationals, like a player like Daisy Burt, for example. What did you think about the level of the squad when you arrived? Was it a pleasant surprise?
I played in Tier 3 before for West Ham. It was quite some years ago. And the tier level has definitely gone up. So I think I was like, I know it's going to be competitive and decent level. But I was, first session that I joined in and at the Leicester camp, I was like, wow, like this is a team and these are players. And it wasn't that I was like, oh, Tier 3, Tier 4. Everyone plays different tiers for different reasons. I think I've learned that over my experience. I've got mates that could be playing in WSL, but for work and life stuff and balance and even income, like they're playing in tier 4 or 5 and they're enjoying it more. So I don't have that view on like the whole like, but I was pleasantly surprised with just everything, like just the bars and the young players they're so, so decent. We've got a really good mix of experiences, younger, older, but like I'm an older player, I've never been on an England camp. We've got younger players that are more experienced in that. Do you know what I mean? I think we've got an amazing blend. And yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, but just because of, not because of, it's better than tier 3 level, just because of like, it is really good.
Yeah.
It is the really good group.
Tell us about some of the other new signings as well, like some really exciting players joining. Emma Kelly, Alicia Boddy. What can we expect from them this season?
I feel like the girls that were here would say that everyone's slotted in and everyone's brought great things to the club, like the new people. Emma Kelly, exciting player. I played against her loads. And we did say at one of our first sessions together, we were like, oh, when they said they were signing you, we were like, oh, I could play together in midfield. Or like, yeah, that's a player that you'd want to play next to and play with. Alicia Boddy, great player. Like, honestly, the talent of it. And like, she's going to go far, that girl. She really will. She's ran games for us and she's 19. That doesn't mean 19-year-olds can't do it. But that's what I mean by, yes, she's younger, but she's been at Bristol. She's been at Leicester. She's been on England camps. So, but then you've got like Naomi at the back, absolute unit, class defender. And just, again, she's a young player. She's 22, but she was at Wolves and she's unreal. And like, honestly, not to miss the rest of them out because everyone is bringing good stuff. But it is a really good bunch that was here and a really good group of coming as well.
And given the investment in terms of that group coming in and your performances last year, so as in the Newcastle team, kind of what are the ambitions for this year? Kind of, we know how ambitious the club are on this side of it and obviously going fully professional.
Yeah, obviously we want to be the best. We want to be the best that we can be. We want to be the best against ourselves each day, if that makes sense. And we know that there's a goal to reach, but we don't want to get carried away with it and say, right, we're professional, we're full time, so we're going to definitely do it. Confidently, we know what we want to do, but we are definitely taking day by day, game by game, session by session, because the moment that you take your eye off the now, focusing on, we want to get promoted, we're going to get promoted, like, that's where you miss things.
And obviously experiencing your first Tyne-Wear derby in pre-season, Sunderland being a championship team, how useful is that as like a yardstick for showing how you could compete with teams who are even a division above where you are now?
Yeah, honestly, that game, it was an interesting one. I always hate playing against Sunderland because I'm a Newcastle fan. And I'm always getting well up for it, but there's not the derby around me, if that makes sense. So like when I was in the championship playing against Sunderland. Yeah, it was a big day, a good day. And also I think we held our own in some parts of the game. They definitely topped us in other parts, that they were clinical in their chances and things like that. But I think breaking down the game, how you would in analysis and stuff, like we did that really well. We need to do this better and stuff like that. It does show that we can compete, but also I think a lot of people don't realise pre-season, it has to show you different tests. So there's no use going to play teams of your level or below your level. You've got to push yourself and play above. So we did that. It was not a nice feeling after. We all know that. We all reflected that. We hadn't had a loss yet. So we said, remember this feeling. We don't want it again. And it's pre-season. it's a journey and keep going, and we know what we need to do to put that right, not making it sound like the worst loss in the world, because I think the game itself, you know, at one point we've got them 2-1 and we've got them on the back foot, and we could take the confidence from that. So yeah, I think the massive lessons, we would learn more from that than other pre-season games. Kind of, I think, maybe a shock as well for some, like, okay, this is where we want to be, so this is the gap that we've got to bridge.
Sunday, a big day, not just for you, but for women's football in the UK generally, with a World Cup final. I think your game kicks off 3 hours after kickoff in Sydney. Have you any idea how you guys are going to follow it, if kickoff's going to be moved, any of those sorts of... What are your plans for the day beforehand?
I think kickoff has been moved. I think that will be announced later today. But yeah, I think it's been adapted because it's a massive day for women's football. So we will be able to watch it beforehand. And there's plans in place that if you don't want to watch it at home, or you want to get closer or relax more, we can watch it. But just a massive day for football. Like, and that's, I think, how far it's come is. There's, I can't remember, when I was 10, so let's say 20 years ago, like, would there even be women's fixtures across the whole of the country that are clashing with the World Cup final? I'm not sure. And then obviously giving it the respect and the attention that it deserves, things are getting moved, which I know that, you know, people can say, oh, men's football, women have scheduled it on the same time. I played football in America and we had a game at the same time as the World Cup men's final. And it was like, how is this possible? That's a big marker that our games for England and all over the world that will clash with this game. So they've been moved. And the fact that we've got that many games going on the weekend is actually a massive indicator of how far the game's come. But just a great day and amazing to start the season in black and white, and especially with this group.
And a quick one as well. Picked up an ankle knock last weekend. How's that doing?
Yeah, much better, honestly. So gutted that I won't be, most likely won't be involved on the weekend. It's like the first home game, but I take every game really seriously. So I would have, I've got as ready for the pre-season games as I would have Sunday. It's just a shame not to play in front of fans, but I'm so excited to see the girls. I'm missing it. Don't get me wrong, I'm completely gutted, but it's more important the team, it's more important we win. So it's the start of the year officially, and it's just, I am buzzing for it.
Lovely stuff that, Jacob. You can hear how deep the Newcastle United roots go into Amber's family and all of her, everything that's involved there. She seems genuinely thrilled to be part of the team now.
I like the way that Newcastle as a club have sort of invested all of these massive resources in scouting budgets and players, and yet the main stipulation at the moment seems to be, does their dad support Newcastle United? Which a surprisingly large amount seem to do, but...
I'm waiting for a call any day
one
now.
One issue club here.
I love the Keegan story. Keegan! That's fantastic. Fantastic. Really exciting. My season tickets arrived in the post today, so I'll be going along on Sunday, all being well. Can't wait to see them in action.
Absolutely. Amber mentioned a potential delay to kick off at Kingston Park on Sunday. The latest information we have is that the club are waiting for the FAWNL to sign off on that decision. So if you do plan to watch the Lasses on Sunday, do keep an eye on the official channels in case there are any changes. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about that Man City game. Newcastle's men travel to Manchester this Saturday for an 8 p.m. kickoff at the Etihad Stadium against the Kevin De Bruyne-less Manchester City. Mark Critchley has written for The Athletic about how difficult it'll be to replace Kevin De Bruyne. They've got some canny other players though, haven't they, George? Let's be honest.
Yeah, but who gives a fuck? We're going to win the league, man.
That's a fair point. I didn't think about it that way.
It's funny.
I'm not used to this from you.
I mean, it's weird, isn't it? It's like last week when people were doing all their previews for the season, whether it was at The Athletic or BBC or whatever, you see a lot, Newcastle are what? Like they're down in sixth, seventh?
Yeah. You know, fifth. Sometimes not even that.
And sometimes not even that. And then, you know, they put in that good performance, brilliant performance, I correct myself, against Villa. And I've read a couple of things since then saying, oh, yeah, well, this is already an early title decider and all the rest of it. It's like, you know, come on. It's one game. It was an absolutely brilliant game. And I think it's totally fair to get carried away. I certainly did after that match because it was just so brilliant. And, you know, what I love, I know you asked me a question about Manchester City, by the way. I will come back to that. But what I love about this Newcastle team is that you sort of think you've got something sussed, or you sort of think you've understood it, and then they find another way to surprise you. And yeah, Villa was incredible. I think this is just an immediate test. I think that's how they're looking at it within the squad. everybody, I think, was surprised, whether it's players, staff, fans, all the rest of us, with how things went. And this is just an immediate challenge. City are obviously the team to beat. They're the team that you judge yourself against. They're exceptional. And, you know, I've been in the away end for the last couple of seasons and seen, you know, one fairly harrowing result and then a bit of a kind of sterner test last season, but yeah, still a defeat. We'll get a very early sense of where Newcastle are. If they get a positive result, though, you know, all bets are off, aren't they?
I mean, Jacob, we played Manchester City early last season as well. It was one of the best games we had at St James's Park earlier on. And it's not a bad time to play them, is it? This is the sort of time you'd kind of ideally play Man City. We can match them in areas of the pitch, can't we? We might be able to get something from this game.
Yeah, no, of course I wasn't a Newcastle United supporter back then.
Of course you weren't.
A very different time in my life.
You were scared. You hadn't hit puberty back then, Jacob, I don't think, had you? You were still a teenager.
Yeah, like, even the match which they'd lost in the second half of the season at the Etihad kind of showed, you know, Newcastle had a better team for the first half hour of that match. I think Gordon had a really good chance, and it was only when sort of Foden broke through and scored the opener that Newcastle really kind of got behind them. That was during a slump in form. Like, obviously, I'm not saying that Newcastle are at Manchester City's level, but it's just such an opportunity to be a benchmark as well as test themselves against top tier European opponents who they might face in the Champions League with that draw racing towards us.
And they shouldn't forget, of course, that Man City have just played a midweek match in the Super Cup,
of course,
and you know that might affect them. I've often thought about Man City is that they sort of use the early part of the season as their pre-season because they have, you know, because they're so good and so successful, they're playing deep into right at the end of the season. Obviously, you have the Champions League this time, and yeah, I mean, there's an opportunity, I think, to catch them. The thing that, yeah, again, that sort of astounded me about the Villa match was, you know, was just how fit Newcastle looked, fit and raring to go, and with all those options in reserve. I mean, I came away from that match thinking that Villa would still be good this season, but I think after an hour, they were blown away, yeah, you know, in terms of fitness levels. So, I mean, it's just really, it is really exciting. And what Newcastle might not have the same individual talent that Man City have. They can't have at this point in their development, but they've got incredible balance in the team and that sense that everybody knows what they're doing and what their jobs are. I think it's a great match.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, the idea of going to the Etihad and playing Manchester City historically has always filled me with absolute dread. And I think it's fair to say our record down there is shite, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
But this is one of the first times I've ever actually thought, come on, like, bring it on. Let's go and see what we've got and test ourselves against arguably one of the best teams in the world. We can give them a game. I know for a fact we can give them a game.
Just to dampen a bit of excitement, I worked out a stat earlier today.
Oh, you and your stats. You're obsessed with stats. You're obsessed with facts. You're obsessed with factual accuracy.
Football's not played on spreadsheets, Jacob. Come on.
I know George doesn't believe in experts, so...
No, I believe in people. I believe in conspiracy theories.
Do you believe the children are the future, George?
I believe in soft pornography.
That's not
two things together. I was trying to. What is that? What is that quote from Bull Durham? Kevin Costner in Bull Durham. That's what I want to read out at this point.
If you build it, they will come. Is it that? No, that's different. Film.
No,
it's that's
not
Field
that.
Of Dreams,
it's
isn't
not
it?
That. That's Field of Dreams. Yeah.
Same sport.
Anyway, let's move on. I'll come back to the Kevin Costner.
Eddie Howe's never beaten Pep Guardiola. Only two other managers have played Pep Guardiola more and not failed to win. Those are Unai Emery and Sean Dyche. Basically, he doesn't like playing against Pep Guardiola. Not many people do. It's a chance for him to get... I mean, Howe's so calm, he probably won't even see this as a monkey on his back. But I think it goes to show, and maybe I'm going to spin this into a positive... Howe doesn't compromise when it comes to playing against Manchester City. He still likes to have his teams going forward, mm-hmm, playing good football.
Yeah.
Because if you compromise your ideals against Manchester City, are you going to be tempted to compromise them against lesser teams? And so to an extent, maybe he's kind of walking into a buzzsaw there, but maybe that in the long term is a good thing. I think that's some of the reason behind it. But just some context, some experts, some stats.
Okay.
Mumbo jumbo.
I found this quote. I don't know how appropriate it is, but I'm going to read it out anyway, okay? So this is Kevin Costner in Bull Durham. And Kevin Costner in Bull Durham played the aging baseball catcher to Tim Robbins' young fastball and throwing pitcher, and Susan Sarandon was also in it. Anyway, here's his quote. "Well, I believe in the soul, the cock, the pussy, the small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fibre, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, soft core pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night."
Okay.
Why did keep we have that again?
How do we relate that to Newcastle United versus Manchester City, George?
We were talking about facts and whether we believe in them. I said I believed in conspiracy theories, and he actually says he doesn't believe in conspiracy theories there because he says Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
But Lee Harvey Oswald famously was a pasty, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah.
So anyway, dragging us back to the main business, George, as far as Newcastle's starting 11 goes for this game, do you see them changing it at all, or do you think it'll be stick?
I mean, firstly, I probably should apologise for the previous couple of minutes and anybody I might have offended with that. I mean, Howe has shown in the past, I mean, particularly last season, that he's not been afraid to make changes when he thinks it's important tactically, or to give other players a run out and stuff like that. It's very difficult to see how he changes it once they've had a week's break and they've been so dominant in that match. Tough on the people who've been left out, but you know, I think he must be tempted to go with the same team that he played against Villa, surely. I don't know if Jacob has any bright thoughts.
The only name I keep coming back to, which is also a name which I suspect George Colkin thinks of every 10 minutes, is Sean Longstaff. Just in the sense that it's Man City. He's got an incredible pair of legs on him.
Oh, I'm
in
sure.
In a running sense.
That's,
Lord. This is back to George and Joe Litton all over again, this, isn't it, from the other week?
I believe in softcore pornography.
Yeah, just in terms of he was probably unlucky not to play the first game of the season. It's a sign of Newcastle's depth and strength, obviously in Tenali and Jolinton. They've got wonderful pairs of legs on them as well. But yes, he'd be the one I'd be tempted to bring in if they're choosing to rotate, because it would feel harsh on him after last season, after his pre-season, for him to be on the bench for both of the opening two matches. So I'd maybe be tempted to knock Jolinton onto the wing and bring Longstaff in.
Interesting. So who would miss out in that
case? Yeah, so who are you leaving out?
Almiron.
Interesting.
So you would put Joe Linton on the right, or would you put Gordon across the right?
I'd probably swap Gordon over, like, even though I do think Gordon's best on the left. But I'm not too fussed about which wing. It's an idea. I'm not nailing my colours to the mast, but...
Are you making things too complicated here?
All I can say is I'm glad you're not picking the team, Jacob. That's all I'll say.
I mean, that's harsh, but I mean, yeah, I think we should all be grateful that there is actually a qualified professional doing that, and Jacob can stick to what he's good at, which no one's quite sure what that is yet. But I had a brief chat. I'm joking. I think Jacob's incredible. I had a brief chat with Sean after the match, not as an on the record interview, but just as a chat, because he walked through the mix zone, and he was very upbeat. He knows there's a lot of football to be played, and he knew that little niggling injury that he'd had in pre-season, which kept him out in America. He came back for one of those games in the Cellar Cup, which of course Newcastle triumphantly lifted. But I think he knew that he was unlikely to start because of that. He was very sanguine. He said, you know, there's going to be a lot of football played this season. He'll get his games, and, you know, was also blown away by the performance of the team. But yeah, he is a player that has been incredibly important for Newcastle, and I'm sure he will continue to be.
Fair play. Right then, just one more little thing about ticketing before we move on and finish off. Club have issued a statement today asking travelling fans to ensure they can prove their identity and that it must match with the name on their ticket. We have to say thanks to Darren for his email as well. Darren didn't want to take his passport to Manchester, which is fair enough. And the Newcastle United ticket office told him a photo of appropriate ID will be sufficient. Please check for yourselves, though, if you are in any doubt and travelling down to the Etihad. But of course, do get in touch. We're all on Twitter, as is the show now, at Pod on the Tyne. And if you're not on Twitter, send us an email. The address is podonthetyne@theathletic.com. I'll have to mention at this point as well a lovely email we received from the Prairie Geordies, Peter and Dave. Wonderful to hear stories of them following Newcastle from Canada, Australia, and everywhere in between over the last 60 plus years. And a quick special mention to the new Denmark fan chapter. Well done, Michael and Anders, for your grafting over there. Hopefully you'll soon get a visit from Peter Lovenkrantz himself. I think we're going to wrap things up, chaps. It's been quite a cute little episode, hasn't it? We've managed to pack a lot in and not a lot of time.
We've just shown our versatility here. I think, like Newcastle's new defence, we're just kind of trying to bring in every facet, show every angle of ourselves and...
Yeah,
show off our legs.
We've hit the ground running. We have a very peculiar belief system, as I've as we've established. But we're moving. We're moving quickly. Absolutely. Intensity is our identity. We're pushing. Yeah, I think this is a good response to my shambolic previous appearance on the podcast. I think we've got things back on track magnificently.
Absolutely. I must just say, though, before we finish off, we are duty bound to say that all of the Newcastle United players have a lovely pair of legs on them. We don't single anybody out for praise in particular. We must just make you aware of that. Thank you very much to everybody for listening yet again. Cheers to Jacob and cheers to George and hello to Chris. Hope you have a lovely day. We'll speak to you very soon. We'll be back on Monday. Take it easy from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Shit, completely forgot to mention, George. Did you see Sandro Tonali tipped up in Wetherspoons? Amazing stuff.
Oh, incredible. I mean, as if he hadn't already ingratiated himself enough with Newcastle fans with that incredible performance against Villa. Here he is, booking a table for cheap booze, cheap scran, in a pub right on my doorstep, I should point out. I mean, he's already pure Geordie. He's practices Geordie on Ginola already. I mean, could he be any more integrated into Newcastle society than that? I mean, you know, possibly you might expect a little bit more sophistication after spending time in Milan, but come on, he's one of us now. He's one of us. He was on the booze.
I just like the way that he's a multimillionaire and he's still trying Wetherspoons and George spurns it despite the fact it's right on his doorstep because he's such a beer snob.
Yeah, I mean, I do have certain standards, Jacob. I mean, don't get me wrong. But now that I know that Sandro's a client, I'm sure I might be there every now and again, every day now.
Well, he actually doesn't book it under Sandro. He purely does it by surname. It's that formal. Do you reckon he meant to book Wetherspoon? Sort of, he had a chat to someone who said there's this really expensive restaurant. He kind of formally went up and booked it.
That's got to be Dan Burns. Dan Burns' fault, isn't it? Dan Burns put him onto that. He must have done.
Maybe he just said, I want to go somewhere with spoons.
I don't know what that means.
I might do that Kevin Costner quote again.
Whatever happens. Okay. I'm sure they sell spaghetti and Moretti and Wetherspoon, so I'm sure you'll be fine. Anyway, Sandro, if you would like a list of potential boozers to go to, give us a shout. We'll let you know.
The Athletic.